if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
And welcome back to a special edition of Over Coffee as we interview the artists and innovators here at Mystic Dragons Festival of Books, their first ever here in the City of Industry. I'm Dot Cannon, and I have a question for you. How are you at drawing? Good, bad, mediocre, don't even mention it? Well, our next guest says that that's just an excuse if you say you can't draw, and we're going to find out why. Luis Escobar is a 20-year storyboard artist for The Simpsons. He's a pro artist, has some very cool-looking comic strips. He's also the author of two books, the most recent one, The Art of Drawfu. Luis, welcome.
Hi.
First of all, your fan section is happy you're here, too. First of all, what do you remember very best from your growing up years that encouraged you to become an artist?
Actually, my parents just encouraged it. My dad was an architect, and he ended up giving me his desk once he wasn't using it, so there was, because he got a new desk. So he gave me his old one, and suddenly I felt like, oh, wow, look, I have a drawing desk. And so that kind of, I don't know, it kind of made me want to use it. And then I would just sit down on it and I would just draw. Years later in junior high, my parents actually went out of their way to buy me a quill and ink. And that kind of upped my desire because, you know, now I'm using professional tools, you know. And I was just like, I don't know, 11 or 12. But it really, like, it was a really exciting thing. Something about the tool just kind of makes you want to use it, so you just use it, and the more you use it, the more you draw, the more you practice, the better you get. It's just kind of, I just read a book recently called The Practicing Mind, and it talks about being in the moment, being, when you practice, you're at the moment, and you're not thinking about the past or the future or the present. That's the ideal situation. Other people call it flow state, and that's kind of what it was. It would just be the act, the mechanical act of drawing that would put me in a state of flow, which would, you know, it's kind of like the Zen moment, like that state of peace of meditation when you're just sitting there. And that's why you go back to it over and over, because of the mechanics of it. So at the time, I wasn't really thinking about getting good. I was just getting good because I was doing it.
How long did it take you to get really good at it?
Well, I didn't really focus on actively getting good, so it took a long time. There's a difference between actively practicing and then just doing it and keep making the same bad mistakes over and over for years. You don't really develop. So yeah, it took me, I don't know, since I was in junior high, since elementary school all the way to high school, that would be, what, 10, 15 years to get good enough so that maybe I could get hired at a studio. And then that's when I actually started taking classes, like real classes, like figure drawing classes and things like that, where suddenly I wasn't all that good. So yeah, it took me a while. I guess if you focus really on it, it could probably take about 5 or 6 years to, like, if you're just focused, and then that ought to be the thing. But yeah, it takes a while.
When you said the same mistakes you were making, what are some of the mistakes beginning drawers do, artists, that are going to hold them back?
Well, it's mindset mostly. The biggest mistake that artists tend to make is assuming that they're going to be good when they just practice once or twice. And suddenly, I should get this because it's drawing. And it's like, no, this requires time and effort and practice, and you've got to make mistakes over and over. And another assumption that people tend to have is that they assume that when you put down a drawing or attempt to draw, the drawing should come out the first time. Now, in most things in life, that doesn't happen, but for some reason, when you're drawing, you just assume that, okay, I'm going to draw this circle, and if it's not the most perfect circle ever, I'm not good at it. Well, of course, because that's not how it works. If you watch a little kid learn to write, they're terrible. It's the most horrible looking thing. And it's just, it's like, this is pathetic. Like, how will you ever learn to write little kid, but you have to do it. Like, I have five kids, and I watch them learn to write, every single one of them. It's just, you never think that they'll ever be able to do it because it's so terrible.
And then one day suddenly.
And then they do it, yeah, because they're forced to do it over and over and over, whether they like it or not. Drawing is not treated the same way. And that's usually, and same with math. Some people have an affinity with math, some people don't, but they don't say, oh, well, you're a talented math student, therefore you should do math, and you're not talented at math, so you're not going to learn it. But when it comes to drawing, oh, you have an affinity to it, okay, then you're the talented one, and then because you don't have one, okay, then you're not going to draw. Then there's like, it's a weird mindset that's kind of the way that people treat drawing, is that it should be innate. Well, it is for some people, and it isn't for some people, but the people who it isn't for, they just have to work harder to get there. The same way that people who aren't good at math had to work harder to get there. And people who didn't pick up the handwriting took longer to get there. But they all have to get there because they're forced to do it, because they're forced to practice it.
Before I get you to tell me a little bit more about your book, and I'd love to have you read your introduction.
Oh, sure.
Everybody listening is not going to forgive us if I don't at least have you tell me a little bit about getting your job at The Simpsons. How did that come about for you?
Well, actually, I went to a high school in Laverne, and a friend of mine in my drawing class, in my art class, told me about a program in Roland Heights. In fact, currently where we're sitting, it's almost like across the freeway from from here. But they had an ROP program, a regional occupational program, where they taught animation. But the teacher, Dave Master, at the time, was connected to everybody in the animation industry. And he had set up internships with Disney, Warner Brothers, Film Roman, in a lot of different places for students in the ROP program. And the ROP program was not open just to high school kids, but to adults. So my friends and I would go together to this high school where we would be taught animation. And that's where we just kind of got introduced to the art form, and we grew to absolutely love it. We fell in love with it. And so we did an animated film. One of the things that we needed to do was an animated film at the end of that class session. So I did my animated film, and at the end of the school year, there was an open house where we would invite industry people to come and look at what we did. And it was a huge event. It's surprising. We did animatronics and all kinds of stuff. It was, you wouldn't think that it was a bunch of high school kids doing this thing, because we kind of almost made a like miniature amusement park. But at the end, there was like, we were all in at tables showing our stuff, showing our movies. But one of the things was we submitted our films to a studio, Film Roman, which does The Simpsons. And three of us submitted our studio, and we all got into an internship program that was supposed to last 6 months. After the 6 months, that was it, or we got hired. And it was unpaid, because at this time, the studio was non-union. So we went there, and we were given absolutely nothing to do. We had to be self-motivated and pursue something. So we talked to all the artists and begged them to give us assignments or something to help them out in whatever they were doing. And they did, but one artist knew the guy that was with me, and then he decided to introduce him to a director. And that artist was much, much, much better than I was. My friend, my colleague, he was much, much better than I was. And they were really, really impressed with his work. So they gave him scenes to do, just small things, just to test him. And I got wind of it, and I'm like, well, I want to do that. Can I get in there? Can I do that? And so they said, okay, well, let's try this guy out then too. So they tried me out. And it was almost kind of pathetic, because my friend was so good and I wasn't all that. I was okay. I was good-ish, but I wasn't professional level enough. But I thought I was. So it was all... So that's what we would do. We would get these little assignments. and we'd do them, and then we'd get corrected, and then we'd learn what we were good at, what we weren't good at, and then we'd go back and fix it. And that's that, you know, do it, fix it, do it again, fix it, do it again, fix it, do it again. It's okay, good. Next, do it, fix it, do it. And then that was how we learned, and that was like when I really started developing more and more. And I also found out what I didn't know, which was a lot. But because they were giving us all this work to do, by the end of the 6 months, they had decided to hire us officially and be part of the crew. So that's how it kind of all began. By the end of the season, we were the first to go because we were, you know, the rookies. And they were going to call my friend back. He kind of had a due date back. They were going to call him back, but they weren't going to call me back. And I knew it, because you could tell by the reactions that my stuff just wasn't up to par. So what I decided to do during my hiatus is go to figure drawing and just work on my drawing and practice and practice and practice for the hiatus season. When I knew that the season had started again, I called up and I resubmitted a portfolio as if I'd never worked there before. And that's when one of the directors and one of the producers came down and looked at my portfolio. And the director I had worked with already, he knew me. He knew where I was at, what level of art I was at. And then he saw improvement in my portfolio and he said, "This is your work?" And I said, "Yeah, this is what I've been doing recently." He's like, "All right." So they gave me another chance. And that was the season where I developed enough so that I wasn't one of the best guys there, but my stuff had evolved enough so that it was professional enough to do it. And then that's when I also decided that after work, all I did was go to art classes. So the money I made working on the show was spent on drawing classes too, so I could improve, so I could get better working at my job.
I've heard you give a lot of great tips in that answer for anybody who would like to have a dream job, like your job of working on The Simpsons, you know, talk, ask people for work, don't accept no for an answer, keep working on that. What else would you tell anybody today who has a dream job in mind? Maybe they want to work for Blizzard or something. What do they do to get a second look at their resume? What do they do to keep their job once they're there?
Well, first, that's two big questions. The first thing, well, nowadays, the internet is really the thing. Like, if you want to get a job anywhere, you've got to put your work out there and you got to produce. And there's really no excuse now. Really, what it is you got to do it. You got to do it. And the ideal situation, you want to find somebody that's better than you to show you what you're doing wrong in the direction where you want to head. So it's like, if you want to be a better painter, find a painter who is really, really good and convince them to teach. And one of the reasons I say this is because even within the studio, I actually went to the best artist in the studio at the time. I was taking classes on the side, but I specifically went to one specific artist who was the best artist in the studio. And I said, "Okay, is it okay if you teach me? If I show you my stuff and you teach me, and I want you to be completely brutally honest. I don't want you to be soft about it. I want you," because the whole point was to get better, not to feel like you're going to get better or that you're good. That doesn't help. So you have to have somebody who's going to be really honest. And so what you need is to find that teacher that is actually good enough so that he's able to show you, okay, this is okay, but here's what you need to think about. Here's what you need to do. This is what you need to work. That's the fastest way. Entrepreneurs, all kinds of people like this, they find coaches that show them where they're, you know, if you want to learn to speak, you get a speaking coach. If you want to learn some kind of finances or something, I don't know, whatever it is, that you usually get a coach. Guitar, you get a guitar teacher. You get a piano, you get a piano teacher. But for some reason, art and artists don't, you can be self-taught, but it'll just take that much longer because you're going to have to teach yourself to be critical about your own stuff. And that's something that is really difficult. You have to train yourself to know what to look for. And it's better to actually have an actual teacher come sit down. And if you really want to step up fast, that's the best way to do it. But then if you want to get hired, that's when you start producing work online, showing it online, be visible, go to shows, show it, learn by what is working, what is selling, what is not selling, what is drawing attention, what is not drawing attention, what is getting comments, what is not getting comments, and then go in the direction where things seem to be successful. But the ideal situation, you have to be, what's the word? I have a friend of mine who put it, you have to be remarkable. That's the goal. You have to be remarkable. And by remarkable, I mean people must remark on your work. It has to be worthy of remark. People will talk to your friends about your thing. That's the goal, to try to be remarkable, to try to be somebody that people can't stop talking about. And then when you reach that, and that's the hard part, that's what takes practice, and that's what takes testing, and that's what takes showing it to people and doing the thing and seeing how people react. That's when you could go to a studio and say, I'd like to work for you, or better yet, the studio comes to you.
That would be great. I love the advice, be remarkable. Before anybody can be remarkable, though, they have to be confident they can draw. Could you read from The Art of Draw Food, please?
Oh, sure, sure. This is something I wrote as an introduction to the book, because I think, and it has a lot to do with mindset. I title it, The Reasons You Do Not Draw. I can't draw a straight line. I can't even draw a good stick figure. Artists are so lucky. They've got the talent to draw. I've heard all the excuses in the books of why you can't draw, and I'm here to tell you right now that that's all they are, excuses. The truth is, you're afraid. Afraid to fail, afraid of being laughed at, afraid of being mocked, afraid of what you don't know. Well, guess what? Here, you learn what you don't know. Here, you will be shown the steps. Here, you will discard your fear. But I have no talent drawing. I'm here to tell you that talent, true natural talent, is only good for one thing, making you want to draw more. But a person with less talent or no talent can usually end up drawing better than someone with natural talent simply by working at it. Since drawing comes easy for the talented, they often rely on it like a crutch. Talent can often be a fatal drawing flaw. I've seen talented artists become stagnant and never improve because they rely on their talent too much. Some talented people, when confronted with a need to improve their skills, quit when they realize it's difficult and requires work. They think they shouldn't have to work at it. After all, they're talented. Worst of all, some talented people think they're the best draftsmen out there. And when they come face to face with draftsmen who are better, they simply quit rather than work at improving. This is where a person with less talent or no talent has an advantage. They've never had it easy, so the work is part of the drawing experience, something they take for granted. The reasons you can't draw. Drawing is a learnable skill. It's a skill with teachable methods that work. All you have to do is learn those methods, practice them, and that's it. Drawing is like writing, like playing an instrument, like learning to dance, like Kung Fu. Kung Fu is like drawing. The Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines Kung Fu as any of various Chinese arts-related disciplines that are practiced especially for self-defense, exercise, and spiritual growth. That is not the definition that I want to use here. The definition that best fits what I was taught when I learned Kung Fu is much more like the following one I found in Wikipedia. Kung Fu or Gung Fu is a Chinese term referring to any study, learning or practice that requires patience, energy, time to complete, often used in the West to refer to Chinese martial arts, also known as wushu. In its original meaning, Kung Fu refers to any skill achieved through hard work and practice, not necessarily martial. This definition of Kung Fu sounds much more like drawing. Kung Fu can roughly be translated as hard work. This means any skill that requires work in order to improve can be labeled Kung Fu. You can learn all the principles of drawing very easily. To be good at it, though, you need to practice them, just like you did when you learned to write. Conditioning. Conditioning your body is the first thing you do when you prepare to learn Kung Fu, the martial art. You prepare your body slowly in order to handle the physical skills you'll begin to learn. It's no different when learning to draw. The conditioning only looks different. You condition your arm, wrist, hands, fingers to do what you want them to do. The result is good hand-eye coordination, which results in making you capable of getting the drawing results you want. A Kung Fu master doesn't teach you the most complex moves right off the bat. He helps you learn them in small, digestible steps so that they slowly become internalized and become automatic. Drawing is the same way. You practice the small basic stuff and those things slowly become part of how you think. Drawing is easy. Enough talk. Let's draw. Drawing is easy. Drawing great is difficult and takes work. At this stage, you simply want to feel comfortable drawing. The lessons in this book will help you do just that. Never again will you feel like you don't know what you're doing when it comes to drawing. So you can't draw a stick figure or a straight line. When you draw, does it look like a mentally deranged monkey made your pencil vomit on the page? Do you have to write what you're supposed to draw or undraw something? Do you want to hang your head in shame because the three-year-old sitting next to you is drawing circles around you? Well, you've come to the right place. By the time you finish the lessons in this book, you will be able to draw appealing drawings and characters. You won't be Michelangelo, the artist, not the turtle, but you're not trying to be. You'll be able to draw for the first time ever, and that's all these lessons are here to teach you. It's the three-year-old's turn to hang his head in shame.
You and I are listening to Luis Escobar, author of The Art of Draw Fu. And Luis, when you say exercises and practice a little bit at a time, what's some homework that our listeners could have that want to begin to learn to draw?
What's some homework? Gosh. I would say I have exercises in the book, but they're difficult to just say. One of the things that I would recommend, and this is something that I did as a little kid, so I'm assuming that you'll be able to do it too, and that is copy. It's something really, really, really basic, but if you want, start really simple. Copy comic strip characters. They're probably like some of the most simple kind of drawings you can do. They're not very complicated, but that's kind of where I started. When I was little, I started copying stuff. Now, copying, what it does and what it helps you do, it helps you visually measure things, and it also gives you the hand-eye coordination. When you watch a little kid learn to write, they actually copy. You see the drawing, that the word that they have to learn to write. And what they do is that then they trace over the word. So like a teacher would write the letter over and over and over, like O-O or P-P-P or whatever it is. And then they would have to trace it so that they could feel how it feels like to make that letter. And then afterwards, they would see the word and then they would have to copy that letter over and over on the line. Well, drawing is like writing. You're already drawing. It's called writing. It's a different term for the same event. So if you could write, if you could remember what it was and how difficult it was for you to start learning to do that, then I would say do the same thing, but with drawing instead. So you would maybe at first, if you're really, really not confident, get a piece of tracing paper and just trace over the drawing you're going to copy. Because then you get the feel of what it's like to go through the motions and the process. And then you can copy it. Then you just look at it and observe it and then copy it. And if it doesn't come out okay, that is fine. That's not the point. The point is to actually do it. The point is to start learning to do it. The point is to start measuring. See how far the eye is from the side of the head. See how big the nose is compared to the eye. And things like that. You're basically training your eyes to see. And just focus on the practice itself. Don't focus on the result of the practice. Just focus on the practice. Just be in the moment and just worry about that. And don't compare yourself to your future self, the idealized way you want to be able to draw in the end. If you're thinking about that, you're just going to get frustrated. It's no good. So that's what I would do, is just focus on the practice. The practice is the goal. Focus only on doing that. When you look at your finished copy, objectively look at what you got wrong and what you got right, and then, without getting frustrated or angry or whatever, take note. Next time I'm going to do this. Next time I'm going to watch my eyes, they got too big or too small, or the head got too big, or I made the body too large compared to the head. And then just take a note of it and either recopy that drawing or do something else and then do it again and just take note and just repeat over and do it over that would be the practice. Don't compare yourself to your future ideal. Just do the practice. And then it'll automatically make you better just by the fact that you're doing it.
And that's such a great point, too, is how many people expect to really be good at drawing. You wouldn't expect to be able to make a cake immediately the first time you did or anything else, but for some reason, I guess because artists make drawing look easy.
Yeah, we think that we can. Right. And usually what you don't see is all the hours of just sitting there just drawing all the time that went into it. And there's different levels, too. Like, there's an artist called Kim Jung-gi, who's a Korean artist, who just takes a brush pen and just starts in one corner and doesn't do any underdrawing. He just pre-visualizes the entire thing. And then by the end of it, he's got this beautiful work of art. And it looks like magic. But when you hear him talk about it, it's because he did so much mental training when he was little. All he did was pre-visualize and trained himself to pre-visualize. And it's like, oh, well, if he could do it, I can do it. I just have to practice pre-visualizing. So that's kind of like, you could always break down somebody's process. They could tell you, like I said, I could tell you everything I know about drawing. And most artists can in about an hour. But putting it into practice and actually doing it, that's what takes the time. And being self-correcting and learning how to do it. That's what takes the time. It's not the techniques. It's not the process. The process is easy. The stuff that you need to know is knowable. It's really easy to understand what to do. It's doing it. That's always the tricky part.
I would guess that doing avoidance and being afraid of failing would stop a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. And it's this whole thing where it's like, oh, this is my drawing. I don't want to show it. Oh, someone's going to judge me. And that's not what you're doing. That's not what you're doing. You're doing it because you want to learn to do it and you enjoy the process. And that's the key. Enjoying the process is the key. If you don't enjoy the process, don't do it at all. Because what's the point? You're just, there really isn't any point. The process is the key. The final outcome can be satisfying or not. But if you enjoyed the practice, the actual process, then you've won.
It's fun to be creative.
Yes.
How did you first decide to share what you had learned, both on your website and in your The Art of Draw Fu?
It was one of those things where I was sitting around thinking about what I could do for others. What can I give? What is it that would be something that I can do that could be beneficial to people? Because, you know, sometimes you just, and that wasn't just, I'm going to draw my own stuff. Because that's really not necessarily, it could be beneficial to people, but it's not directly, it's a little self-centered. So, you know, self-expression, I could do something that I'm trying to express myself through and say something with and connect with somebody. And that's great. And that's also another aspect of drawing and art that I want to pursue. But sharing information is much faster and more direct than something that is a thematical statement you want to make in a story or in a painting. It's much more direct to actually tell somebody X, Y, and Z, here's how you do X, Y, and Z. So I decided to, why not, give it a try, see if it is helpful and if I can do it. And also, what is out there already and what is not out there? And one of the things that I discovered was, as hard as I tried, I wanted to make a website where I could not only share my drawing experience, but I also wanted to share other artists' books on drawing. And I decided to start with this notion of absolute beginners, because there were so many books on intermediate. Like, they were teaching people who already knew how to draw better. So where's the book about for the person who doesn't know how to draw anything, who's afraid to draw because they're afraid to be judged, who are self-conscious? And I looked, and because I wanted to be able to also point to these books and review them on my website, I went looking for them and I couldn't find, I found one. And I was like, wow, there's only the one. So I should do this. This is the thing that I think needs to maybe be addressed. So, and I could address it because I've got ideas. So that's kind of how it started. I started looking for that.
Louis' website, on which he offers drawing lessons, is thedrawingwebsite.com. Check it out. He goes into detail on rhythm, cartooning, and all kinds of other techniques. That's thedrawingwebsite.com. How many more sequels will you have to The Art of Draw-Fu?
I am working on the second book right now. I plan to write 4, I think. Yes, because I have 4 levels. I took a martial arts class. I took Kung Fu, and they didn't give belts. You just went up levels. And you started with level 0. And that's kind of the way I have it done in my website. I start at level 0, which is, you know nothing, this is how you get to level 1. And then level 1 would be intermediate, and then level 2 would be trying to become professional. And then level 3 is being a pro. So I guess actually that means that level 4, which would be mastery, and since I haven't reached mastery, I don't know how I'm going to do that one. But a friend of mine told me that, gave me a really good advice, and he said, well, that's where you study the masters.
And you have to be super critical and everything like you've been telling me. When do you expect your second book to be out?
I'm midway through it. Actually, it's currently in progress. I'm actually releasing the chapters free on the drawingwebsite.com. So right now I'm on I've released lesson 5. And I'm currently working on lesson 6 as of the time of this recording. And because my audience, the people who follow me on my website, kept on asking me to do it, and I wanted to do a comic book version. That was my goal. I wanted to draw a comic. But people kept on asking me to just, when's the next book coming out? When's the next book coming? And I'm like, okay, fine. So I gave in. But because I didn't have enough time to do that, and I have another website that I also write in, and I have another newsletter that I write in, I decided that the drawing website newsletter, I was going to use that as to piecemeal, as motivation to piecemeal the chapters. So if you currently sign up to the drawing website newsletter, you're going to get the chapters once a week in pieces. And then once I finish the entire chapter, I compile it and I put it up on the website, and then I go to the next lesson. And so that's how I'm doing it. So yeah, so that's the progress. And it looks like and after I'm done with that, I'm going to take a break and then start the next book.
So thedrawingwebsite.com, and
yes,
People can subscribe to that. And incidentally, I got a chance to look at your Angel Cowgirl book on that one, which I really liked.
Oh, thank you.
Quite a lot. As a dad with 5 children, how do you inspire your kids the way your father inspired you to be artists? Are they going to be artists?
Well, none of my kids want to draw all that much. I think it's because I draw, and so they're like, okay, then I don't want to do that because I'm intimidated. Actually, my daughter is the most interested, and I just allow her to do her thing. What I do is get out of their way. I don't want them to look at my art and then compare themselves to me. I want them to draw what they draw, how they draw it, the way they want to draw it. And if they ask me something about drawing, I will answer. But I want them to just enjoy it. I don't want it to be the process. I don't want it to be work. I want it to just be fun. And if they want to draw, fine. If they don't want to draw, fine. And when they show me their work, I encourage them and I pat them on the back and I say, this is great. But I don't say that it's an amazing drawing or whatever it is. It's the effort behind having done it that I encourage more than anything else. And so if I had my druthers, I would actually, my wife, she gives my kids homework assignments on top of the homework assignments that they get from school. If I had my druthers, I would have them sit down and have time to just copy something. Just copy it. And just be part of the thing. One of the things that they do is, here's a My Little Pony comic. Pick a pony, copy it. You know? And I would just do that. And that's what I've been thinking in the back of my head, that I would love to just have them do that so that it just becomes part of the thing. It's just something that they, it's a skill that they just have that they could bring in whenever they want, but it doesn't have to, they don't have to pursue it. They could pursue it or not, but it's something to have there, you know, and it wouldn't be that much more effort that they're doing. I mean, they're doing math and they're doing, you know, writing prompts and things like that. It's like, why not just have them copy something?
Something they'd enjoy and be creating.
Yeah, and then they just get the facility. So, yeah, of just drawing and observation skills and things like that. So that, to me, ideally, that's what I would do. Haven't done it yet. I talked to my wife about doing it, but we haven't actually acted on it. But currently, whenever my kids draw something, I encourage it. And when they don't draw it, I'm not gonna force it on them.
Before we have to wrap up here, your kids are fans of a new project you have. You did actually draw a comic that you almost finished with, The Black Terror Kid.
Yes, yes. it's interesting. I drew it just for fun, just for the heck of it. And I drew it kind of a little bit based on my kids a little bit, just kind of taking some of their mannerisms and taking some of their energy and just kind of putting it on the characters. Because the character is a little, kind of a little kid superhero. And he's very innocent, and there's a bad guy that he's always thwarting accidentally by being innocent. So, and I just kind of wanted to capture that innocence of them. So then they got old enough to actually read it, and they loved it, and I was blown away. Like, I was like, what? I can't believe they're reacting this way. But I guess I should have, and especially because one of the lines in one of the, and I knew this was going to happen, and actually there was a line in the comic where the character, the Black Terror Kid, gets yelled at by the bad guy and he says the word poop. And the next line is the Black Terror Kid looking stunned because he just got yelled at, but then he laughs and said, "You said poop." And I thought to myself, yeah, this is would be my kids' reactions. And sure enough, when they got to that part, it was exactly the same reaction. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my gosh, look. They're laughing because they said poop.
Do they recognize themselves in the Black Terror Kid?
No, absolutely not.
Of course not. Where can people see your Black Terror Kid comic?
That would be at luisescobarblog.com. It's under my artwork and stories tab. And I'm currently working on, there's two comics. One is 8 pages and one is 5 pages. But I'm currently working on a 12-page end, quote-unquote end, of that series where the theme is that the Black Terror Kid goes to the bad guy's hideout and knocks on the door. And that's basically the impetus of the gags. That's where it starts, and then it ends with a gag. So I'm currently working on the final version of where the Black Terror goes to that door and knocks on the door, but he breaks the doorbell and then all chaos, you know. So, and yeah, that's going to be 12 pages and that's going to end it, and it's going to be in a little comic that I'll actually be able to have in print. But right now, currently, you could just look at it online and read it.
We'll look forward to having it come out. Yeah. As we wrap it up here, Louise, what would you really love your kids, anybody that learns from The Art of Draw Fu, anybody that learns from your website, to get from you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, it really, creativity and art is one thing. The craft by which you do it is a completely different thing. So drawing is a craft first, in the same way that writing is a craft first. But it's a medium from which you can express yourself. So don't be afraid. That's the thing. People are so afraid of failing. Don't be afraid of failing. Don't think of it as failing. I forgot where I got this from, but I think it's such a good way of thinking about it. You're not failing. You're just figuring out how to succeed.
We had better reluctantly wrap this up here. Louise, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You and I have been listening to Luis Escobar, the author of The Art of Draw Fu and of Angel Cowgirl, 20-year storyboard artist for The Simpsons. You can find his most recent work on The Black Terror Kid that we've just been discussing on his website, luisescobarblog.com. That's luisescobarblog.com. www.overcoffee.com. Also, if you'd like to challenge yourself with some drawing lessons, because as Luis says, you and I have no excuse, check out either his new book, The Art of Draw Fu, or thedrawingwebsite.com, on which he's discussing things like design, background, cartooning, and all kinds of other cool stuff. That's thedrawingwebsite.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.